Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the new voice of Conservative Talk Radio. Unafraid and aggressive, he will take on anyone, including Republicans. This is Aaron McCready. Give Aaron a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. Also, follow him on Twitter at Aaron McCready and visit him on the web at aaronmccready.com.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Aaron McCready. Oh, we got some problems there. I am Aaron McCready. Thank you for joining us today. As some of you may or may not know, today we're going to be talking about two different things. First, the first part of the show, we're going to talk about the Georgia House Bill 907, which is very controversial in the state of Georgia right now. It's a bill sponsored primarily by Republicans. But then on the flip side of that, there's a lot of Republicans that are totally against this bill. Then in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about the Russia and Ukraine conflict that's going on right now. And last minute, I was able to get our good friend on the show, Jack Caravelli. As you all know, that's been listening to the show for a few years. Jack Caravelli was in the CIA. Then he moved over to the White House, and in the White House, he served under President Bill Clinton as the Director of Nonproliferation for the Middle East and Russia. So I am thrilled that he's going to be back on later on in the show, and since we have the Russia and Ukraine conflict going on, and we may or may not, who knows what President Obama will do, but may send troops over there. But before we get started with the show, on a personal note, I just want to take a second. Back home in Virginia, where I'm from, last week, there was, in Glade Spring, Virginia, some domestic violence that went on up there. And the high school that I attended, Virginia High School, back, oh gosh, eons ago, seems like, there's an English teacher that her first year there was my first year as a student. I knew her as Miss Griffin. She later got married and was Mrs. Palmer. But she was a great English teacher. I never had her, but I knew her. And all my classmates knew her. But she was killed by her husband, and her husband also killed her 17-year-old son. So not to get too dark on this or anything, but just wanted, you know, thoughts and prayers to her family and also to my classmates and to the folks at Virginia High School. She's also the drama coach there as well. But anyways, just want to move on to House Bill 907. Now, I do have two guests getting ready to come on. One is Jimmy Pruitt. He's representative of House District 144. He's very good to come on. He's actually one of the co-sponsors of this bill. And then we also have Greg Williams. He's going to be on as well. He is chairman of the Buckhead Young Republicans, co-chair of the Buck Springs Breakfast, and he also holds a bachelor's degree in journalism from Grady College of Mass Communications at UGA, and he worked for the Marietta Daily Journal for a year as a reporter after graduation, and he's been employed in the mortgage industry as a mortgage banker for the past 11 years, and of course he's been active in the Republican Party in Georgia, and like I said, he serves as chairman of the Buckhead Young Republicans, and also representative Pruitt represents the counties of Dodge, Blackley, and Wilcox, as well as portions of Ben Hill and Pulaski counties. He's a former administration floor leader to Governor Perdue, and he is also a businessman who lives in Dodge County. He started his first business in 1974, has been instrumental in establishing other businesses. He's also actively involved in industry recruitment for the local community, and his efforts have been significant in bringing companies to his area of Georgia. Greg Williams and Representative Jimmy Pruitt, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Aaron, and
my condolences go out to those in Virginia also. And thank you for having me on. And Greg, I appreciate the job he does and his organization, and I support him 100%, and look forward to this discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Pruitt, for coming online and actually having a discussion about this issue. And, Aaron, I want to reiterate the condolences. That is a tough way to lead off the show, for sure.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I do want to get started with House Bill 907. Representative Pruitt, you're one of the sponsors. And then, Greg, you've been outspoken in your opposition against it. And, you know, one concern I have, and we'll start off with you, Representative Pruitt. I went on to the Republican, the Georgia GOP website today, and the first thing that I saw, and I want to get it here just so I don't make a mistake, but it said choose freedom. And I guess my concern with that statement from the Georgia GOP is, and it's been said from Uber, one of the companies that House Bill 907 will affect, that they will have to leave the state of Georgia if this passes. And therefore, it will, in my opinion, eliminate the freedoms of Georgia to choose if they want to take a taxi cab or if they want to do Uber or Lyft. And I guess my question is for you is, why did you decide to support this, and what are the benefits to Georgians?
Well, thank you for the question. First off, very seldom do we ever introduce a bill that is perfect. Secondly, we very seldom ever bring one to perfection. But when a bill is introduced, it has sometimes a lot of things in it that people like and a lot of things they don't like. And that's why we have this wonderful process in Georgia where we go through many, many committee meetings, subcommittee, and then many committee meetings, and then it goes to rules if it passes out of committee, and then it goes to the floor. Of course, then it goes to the Senate and has to go through subcommittee and then committee and then through their rules and to the floor and then to the governor to sign. So we've got a great system in place, and certainly we are citizen legislators. And citizen legislators means people from all over the state of Georgia that see things in different areas of the state and have different views on things. Now, I'll be honest with you, when I saw the bill, no, I didn't like the bill the way it was written whatsoever. However, there was a few things in it that did make sense to me, and signing on to a bill gives you a little bit of credibility when it comes to either perfecting the bill as close as you can to meet the needs of the citizens of Georgia, or it puts you in a better position to even kill the bill if necessary. Now, I will say this about Uber. I've used them several times. I think they're one of the finest organizations that we have in the state. They're first class. I don't know that much about Lyft, honestly, but Uber's doing it, and they're doing it right, and I'm very proud of them, and I don't want to do anything to hurt them whatsoever.
But one thing that they said, though, is if this bill does pass it, they're going to have to pull out. There's a lot in this bill that also says, you know, that they're going to have to, it's going to be a lot of legwork on their end. They may have to hire more staff just to keep up with it, because they're going to have to report monthly to the government on all their contractors.
Well,
if I'm reading the bill correctly.
Again, there's a lot of things that was in the bill that have been taken out, and we've been constantly refining it. The only two things, and I'll just be as blunt as I know how to be, I live in South Georgia. And by the way, my district is 149, and I need to change some things from wherever you found that, probably on my website.
But I represent, biography.
I represent Dodge, Telfair, Wheeler, part of Jeff Davis, and part of Lawrence County.
Okay.
Now, after the census, you know, all the districts were changed, so mine was changed 2 years ago. Anyway,
right.
living in a rural part of state about, you know, where the population, the biggest city out of five counties that I serve only has 10,000 people. The biggest county only has about 18,000. So sometimes we see things from a different perspective than they do in Atlanta. And I've learned a lot about Atlanta and the metro area and their needs versus the kind of needs that we have. And it is a process to where we get together. And certainly I believe the word politician means that it should mean anyway the ability to compromise. But with this this bill was first presented. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, one thing, you know, you mentioned that, but, you know, you said you represent, you know, and Greg, jump in anytime if you want to.
I'm very happy to hear from Mr. Pruitt on this. I've been outspoken about this as somebody that, you know, not only is it's like the hair club for men. Not only am I a client of Uber, I've also gone through their rigorous screening process, and I log in about 10 to 15 hours per week as a driver, in addition to running a mortgage business. So I have a little bit of expertise on how the service works. And one of the best things that Mr. Pruitt said was his logging on or sponsoring to this bill was a really good chance to kill it, which I encourage him to continue that thought process.
Well, one question I had, Representative Pruitt, is, you know, we look at the, in regards to this bill, we look at, you know, things at a national level, a federal, state, and local level, but why not with this bill let the local entities and local governments choose if they want to regulate Uber, or you know, rather than making it
let me interject there. The problem with the bill right now, and Jimmy's right, it's gone through a lot of additions, and there's a couple parts in there that me as a free market capitalist can support. But the major part in there is the fact that Uber would have to be relegated to go through the taxi cab medallion or certificate of public necessity. Now, I know Jimmy's district probably doesn't have a whole lot of taxi cabs, and they don't know what the medallion issue is. But basically, medallions is an extortion from city and local municipalities that basically grant anybody that wants to get in the transportation industry, they have to beg for the right to offer their services. And it's turned into a real big mess up here in Atlanta. And
let me get Jimmy Pruitt's response on that. What say you on that?
I am 100% against that, 100%. The only two things I want to see happen in this bill for me to support it is to ensure that drivers have liability insurance and that they go through background checks. That's the only two things that I want in this bill. And you say, well, why? Uber already does that. Yes, they do. But that doesn't mean the next company that comes along may not do that, and we have no regulation over them insinuating or enforcing that we can enforce that make them equal to Uber in what they already do. And I'm very proud of what they're doing. So I don't see how Uber could go against those two things that I actually hope and is the only two things that this bill will accomplish. And that's my stance on it, that if it does more than that, then again, I'm totally against government regulations. I've started multiple businesses in my lifetime, and government regulation gets in the way of a lot of things that we could do a whole lot better. And I love ingenuity, and I love entrepreneurs, and I just think they've hit on something that is just dynamic. And, I think they're a wonderful company, and I don't want to do anything but protect them. But I'm going to tell you, if another company starts up, they don't do the background checks on their drivers, and they don't have insurance, and there's an accident, and somebody gets hurt or gets sued, the first thing that's going to happen is it's going to put them all out of business. So this is a way, I think, to help protect Uber and put all of them on the same level.
In its current form, will you support the bill?
No.
Okay.
Who's got the train in their backyard?
I do. I'm sorry.
And Representative Pruitt, you know, I'll be at the Capitol tomorrow, and I appreciate your opinion on this, because I 100% agree with you about the background checks and the insurance. You're correct, sir, that both Uber and Lyft currently do that. But you brought up an interesting point that any new companies – well, any new company, like their sidecar, and there's a few other renditions that are mostly based in California – there's a rational self-interest for these companies to have good people driving, because as you said, if somebody got into a wreck, not only would the person, the victim, be injured, but the company profile would also be harmed. So they have that self-interest, but I can agree with you on your two statements about the background checks and the insurance. If that was the only part of this bill, then I would be 100% behind it, but there's a lot of language in this bill that frankly would put Uber and Lyft out of business in the state of Georgia.
Well, I totally am against anything other than those two things, just like I stated. And if you want to come and talk to me, I'd appreciate it, because so far no one has come and talked to me. I'm not on that committee, and at the time y'all had the hearing on it, I'm the chairman of another committee, and we had other meetings going. I've actually invited Uber to come talk to me, but I haven't got a response from them either. But again, all I want to do is the right thing to make Georgia the most friendly state in the United States to do business. I don't believe people ought to be overtaxed, over-regulated.
Yeah,
well,
the thing
let me
is...
Let me jump in there real quick. I just wanted to talk to you on that with in regards to your statement with Uber, not speaking with Uber. I did invite Uber on the show, and they said they did have a prior commitment along with the rest of the sponsors of this bill. Emails were sent out, and Representative Pruitt, you're the only one that would come on, and which I really do appreciate. Just want to go on the record and say that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and Rep. Pruitt, me and you may have not physically met. I testified at the subcommittee and also was a participant in the press conference hosted by Americans for Prosperity about this. And we agree on the two points that you have. This bill, unfortunately, in its current edition, which has changed several times, does not just put those two things into motion. It puts into motion what I call the Taxi Cab Monopoly Protection Act. And what's troubled me is the fact that a lot of rural legislators have just signed on with Alan and maybe not have understood, you know, what the rideshare industry does, the services. And you just said you've used it personally and you're a big fan. I can agree with you about the two qualifications that you have. So what my suggestion or what I hope is that we go back to the drawing board, fix the two problems that you've said, and then make it a clean and simple bill.
Well, I agree with you. And again, I've had many, many people ask me and email me some very, very ugly and nasty letters. And frankly, it seems like a younger group of people. But, you know, when, again, we get beat up a lot of times over things because they haven't, before they've been perfected. And sometimes, don't you think it's better? And they've asked me to, you know, take your name off of it. No, I can have more influence if I stay on it. I think that would be a coward way out. So I'm sticking with it, hoping I can help fix it. And if I can't, then I'll vote against it, and I'll do my best to try to kill it if it's not perfected.
Well, with that being said, though,
let me just jump in here.
Let me jump in here.
Okay.
With that being said, though, where is the bill in its current status? How does it stand? The chances of passing, and then also, you know, with crossover day tomorrow, where do you see this bill going, Representative?
Well, to my knowledge, it's passed out of committee, and it's got to go to rules. And rules could either sit on it and do nothing, or they could send it back to committee to be reconstructed. Where do I see it going? I really am doubtful unless it's perfected that it'll come to the floor. That's my personal opinion. I haven't talked to leadership about that whatsoever, but that's my personal opinion. And going back to what you said too, Greg, frankly, the taxi situation in Atlanta is not good. It really isn't. And I get a lot of comments about that. But also the charges they have to pay to get that status of being, you know, to get in a license to be a taxi is absorbent. It's almost like it's robbery. But again, that's not any of my business. That's local, and I plan to stay out of that. But
well, yeah, but Mr. Pruitt, you, I'm glad that you were cognizant of that, because what happens in Atlanta does affect the rest of the state. Eastman is in Dodge County, and in your area, I know it's rural, but you know that a lot of business goes to, and Savannah is probably the closest metro big city area to you, and having freedom of choice for transportation alternatives, I mean, that's what this is all about.
I agree with you. I think it's the best thing that's happened to Metro in years, and whoever came up with the idea was very smart, and that's what makes Georgia what it is entrepreneurs that have great ideas that can put them into play. But it doesn't mean as legislators that we don't have a right and an obligation to keep our people safe. And I'm going to tell you, I'm passionate about older people, and I'm passionate about children. And even our kids, the pre-K teachers had to have background checks. And then somebody says, well, let me have the choice. I can decide whether I want to ride Uber or Lyft. Sure you can. But if you've got a daughter or a wife or a grandmother that's up here and she needs a ride and somebody suggests a company, and it may be a third or fourth company that's on its way into town to open the same business, I just want to ensure that they're being picked up by people that's been checked out properly, and that and you can say, well, if they're not doing a good job, they'll go out of business. Yes, they will, but it may be too late. Somebody might have already been harmed before that happens, and then we're all in trouble. And people ask our legislators, why didn't you do something?
Yeah, well, but see, that's the culture of fear, the culture of what if. Here's the thing.
Well,
I mean, if you've been in a taxi, if you've been in a taxi cab lately in Georgia,
let me say this. We ask our pre-K teachers to have background checks. Do you think we should have waited till a child got hurt before we did?
Of course not, because they are
okay.
Presiding over little kids. I mean,
right.
Uber.
It is sometimes our elderly people. They need that same supervision, and I took an oath to be sure that I did what I needed to do to protect the people of the state of Georgia, and this does nothing to hurt Uber whatsoever, doesn't add any expenses to them whatsoever, because they already do it, and I'm very pleased that they do, but I want to ensure that another company says, well, that's a great idea, I like the concept, I'm going to do the same thing, but they don't have the credentials that Uber does, and we would have any way to regulate them if we don't put something like this in place.
Fair enough. As you said, your two points are valid, and I have no problem with those. But the current bill that is up for Rules Committee, potentially that passed out of subcommittee, a committee that I testified in front of, I waited around for 5 hours and got 2 minutes to speak. That's government for you. But the current edition of the bill does not address solely your two points, my friend.
But, you know, and I've got a current copy of the bill right here, and you know, it is regulation after regulation after regulation. If a company doesn't do this, it's a $5,000 fine, another $10,000 fine. You know, not just in its current form, it doesn't just you know, for background checks to make sure that there's a safe vehicle. But it is, if you don't jump through the right loophole, or not loophole, but, you know, hoop at the right time, you're just going to be fined out of business.
Now, Aaron, you're leaving a lot of air between what you're saying and not getting to any specific points.
Well, here, Representative Pruitt, hang on 1 second. I'll read you some points right here. I've got the bill that was on the site today. And it goes line by line, and you know, it talks about rideshare drivers. And I'm flipping through it right here, and I'll read you some fines. On line 195, and it says failure to register according to the provisions of this code and section shall subject the violator to a civil fine not to exceed $10,000 per violation. Right above it, it says have a dreb. In a case of transportation referral service provider, as defined in subparagraph B of paragraph 5 of code section 40-1-190, has established a driver training program sufficient in to ensure that each rideshare driver employed by, contracted with, or utilized by such provider can safely operate his or her vehicle prior to the provider being able to use such rideshare driver transportation services. In the situation of Lyft, you know, Lyft, you know, the average everyday Georgian is the driver. So before they can even use a Lyft vehicle, they're going to have to go through this training program. And if they don't go through this training program, then Lyft is subject to a $10,000 violation per each instance. That's specific for you, Representative Pruitt.
It is. And again, I go back to the statement I said earlier. I know your job, Aaron, is to try to create a friction maybe between me
hang
and
on,
Gary.
Hang on a minute. Representative Pruitt, no, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. That's okay. Not my job at all. I'm very passionate about this because if you go and you take and you go and ride in an Atlanta cab and you go to Uber, you know, yes, I think they both need to have your background check. But the average Georgian, who's going to feel safer in what? And I'll give you an example that happened to me. On New Year's Eve one night, I was in an Atlanta taxi cab, and I left my cell phone. And lo and behold, I called the cab company. I'm not going to name names. And they tried to get with the driver. They didn't know the number, the cab number. I didn't pay attention to that. But I also left my cell phone in an Uber car. I had that driver's phone number. I called him right away. Lo and behold, in 5 minutes, I had my phone back. So it's not something to create friction. And, you know, if speaking out for the Georgia voters, Representative Pruitt, is creating friction, then so be it.
No, but I made it pretty plain, you know, that the two things that I would back and that I would push through, and that is it. Now, you continue to go through the bill, and I understand that stuff's still in there.
But you're a sponsor of the bill. You're a sponsor of the bill.
Who is saying this? I'm not sure who I'm talking to. Is this Aaron?
Hello?
Yeah. I've been quiet just listening. This is Greg.
Yeah, so, it's Aaron. Okay. I mean, you're a sponsor of the bill.
Aaron,
and you know.
Aaron, I made that plain in the beginning, too, that sometimes you sign on to a bill that has some good points in it where you could work on it and have some influence on how it turns out. And that was my full intent. That's the only two things that I support is what I've already committed to. And, you know, you watch how I vote if it comes to the floor and you'll know. But I agree with Greg that those are the only two things that need to be done. Outside of that was over-regulation. And I am not in the business of regulating anybody other than just keeping the public safe. That's all I care about.
We got
Mr. Pruitt, I appreciate your voice on this. This is like you said, nobody's contacted you about this because frankly it's a difficult issue to talk about. It's a very Metro Atlanta because y'all, Alan Powell, the lead sponsor, the chairman of public safety, he doesn't have any cabs or rideshare industry in Hartwell, Georgia. And so it's been a little bit of a dilemma as to why some of the more rural Republicans would have signed on to this bill. But I appreciate the fact that you've read it. And that at this point, from what I've heard from you, sir, is that you do not support the current edition of it.
Real quick, let me jump in here. We've got 2 minutes left. Representative Pruitt, I'm going to let you go last. But, Greg, if you'll take about 45 seconds, and then we'll give Representative Pruitt the rest of the time.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, one of my missives, and I've done the full disclosure that not only have I gone through the rigorous process that I also use Uber as a service, but philosophically, the fact that we would try to regulate a free market entity that is providing transportation options in a city or a state like Georgia that frankly was handcuffed just 2 weeks ago by a snowstorm, it's disingenuous to me. And, you know, I urge the legislators, and I'm glad to hear that Mr. Pruitt is signed on as somebody that is wanting to fix this bill to make it better and to address his two points. And I encourage all legislators to take a hard look at this, go back to the drawing board, and make sure that we are not constricting business in the state of Georgia, but we are promulgating business.
Okay, Representative Pruitt, I'll give you about a minute and a half, and I'll give you the last word.
Okay, well, thank you very much again for being on the Republican, young Republicans that I do support, and they've actually, some of them have come down and helped me in my rural area campaign and spent the night with me. It's a great organization. I will say this, that at times there's bills that come out that have great ideas, but they need to be protected, which I've already said. We've had bills that actually, people have come to me and said, Jimmy, this is a year after it didn't pass. Jimmy, will you take this bill and make it into common sense so it'll be something that we all can live with? Because the reason it didn't pass, it had over-regulation in it and put unfunded mandates on people. And that's what I enjoy doing. And I guess not being from Atlanta, I can have an open mind about it, whereas people who live in the metro, and you said, why didn't they sign on it? Well, if I lived up here and it was going to be this controversial, I probably wouldn't sign on to it either, but I certainly would have a feeling about how it was done. But I'd rather somebody from rural Georgia who won't take a beating over it in a campaign as it is now, because they are from rural Georgia and it really doesn't affect the people back home. But also I want somebody to represent the people of Georgia, and that's the reason I signed on to it, because I know that it's controversial the way it was written, and I have taken a beating over it. And if I lived here and had to run again, I'm sure I'd be in trouble, because a lot of times you see what it starts out like, but you don't look at the finish. And even when this thing is finished, and even if it has just those two things on it, Greg, there's still people going to be upset with me because I signed on to it.
Well, we've got to leave it there. I want to thank both of you for being on, Greg Williams and Representative Jimmy Pruitt. Thank you both for coming on. We got a little heated there, but the way I look at it, we're all Republicans, but, you know, I think it's like, you know, family. Sometimes a Republican family, sometimes you just have a little squabble, but in the end you still want what's right for all of Georgia, just how we're going to get there. So I thank you both for coming on, and you're both welcome back anytime.
Thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Representative Pruitt. I look forward to meeting you tomorrow during Crossover Day.
401 at the Capitol is my office, and one of the things for sure, Aaron, if we all agree, there wouldn't be any need for all of us.
that's true. Representative Pruitt and Greg Williams, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you,
Aaron. Bye. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Representative Jimmy Pruitt, and then also Greg Williams. They were great to come on. We were debating House Bill 907, and tomorrow's a big day in the state of Georgia's Crossover Day. That's when the bills that have left, maybe I'm wrong, but the bills that have left or have been passed by the Senate or by the state legislature go to the other side, and then they can vote on them or send them back and all that good stuff. So that's what they're talking about when you hear a Crossover Day for those folks that do not live in Georgia. We are going to take some news, and then we're going to be back with Jack Caravelli. Thanks for listening to the Aaron McCready Show, and give us a call at 646-200-3400. But right now, here's Fox News.
News Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. Secretary of State John Kerry heading to Kiev this week as the German government says Russian President Vladimir Putin has agreed to have a contact group work on getting a dialogue going between the leaders of Russia and Ukraine.
In a telephone call with German Chancellor Angela Merkel, Russian President Vladimir Putin is defending Moscow's decision to send troops into Ukraine, saying the Kremlin had to protect its people and its interests. Meanwhile, here in Crimea, several military installations have been taken over. Ukrainian officers at an infantry base say they've been taken hostage. Ukraine's Coast Guard has also moved its ships from their ports out into the Black Sea, although Kiev maintains they're still loyal. This is the head of Ukraine's Navy has surrendered and is being tried for treason. In Sevastopol, Jessica Gallagher, Fox News Radio.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel saying all options are on the table when it comes to any action against Russia, but he urges caution.
This is a time for careful, wise, steady leadership. The tensions increase, and I think all nations have to be very careful here of not promoting any more tension through provocative action.
On CBS's Face the Nation, they need the rain in California, but it's a case of too much at once. Several storms over the past few days increasing the danger of mudslides.
Rain is starting to taper off a little bit across California, a good and bad news situation. Obviously, they need the rainfall desperately. But so fast, we're dealing with flash flooding and the potential for mudslides. So over the last 48 hours, some areas have received several inches of rain on top of what we received really last week. And in some cases, we're talking about 8-9 inches of rainfall. This is not snowfall. This is rainfall.
Fox meteorologist Janice Dean and a large portion of the south and west dealing with wintry weather. About 1,600 flights canceled with another 1,500 delayed. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Your side has been desperately wrong.
He continues not to tell the truth.
He's got
to
be a
problem. The whole thing is a mess.
Let me make this point.
Nobody can justify this.
If I ask a question, I want an answer.
Another crazy school district.
Reaction from both sides.
What's the beef from the left?
Do you not see the danger?
Not a fact.
No,
that's
no,
what a pinhead says.
No BS, no fluff. Straight up fact.
Straight talking. Spin stopper. Calling out the pinhead and calling it like it is.
Please watch the O'Reilly Factor weeknights on the Fox News Channel.
Weekdays on Fox Business.
Bottom line here is we want investors to be prepared for the day ahead, the week ahead.
Opening bell with Maria Bartiromo.
The concept is to bring perspective, analysis. All day long, I'm speaking with global allocators of capital, CEOs, heads of state, so I can anticipate some of the major moves or reactions, giving investors an edge.
Opening bell with Maria Bartiromo. Weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern on Fox Business.
The murder trial of Olympic runner Oscar Pistorius set to get underway tomorrow in South Africa.
"We will win," screams the banner headline of one South African newspaper today, splashing the prosecution's confidence they will put Oscar Pistorius behind bars for the murder of his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp. Reports also today that Steenkamp's friends will tell the court of the rows the couple had over his alleged love of porn, with the prosecution using that to try and prove theirs was not a loving relationship. In the court of public opinion here, the Blade Runner is no longer a hero. Summing up the view on the streets, one writer says, "Let's just call a blade a blade." In Johannesburg, South Africa, Paul Tilsley, Fox News Radio.
Sean Connery urging fellow Scots to vote for independence when a referendum is held later this year. He says the opportunity to separate from the rest of Britain is too good an opportunity to miss. The 86th Annual Academy Awards are tonight in Los Angeles. The favorites include Matthew McConaughey for Best Actor in Dallas Buyers Club, Cate Blanchett for Best Actress in Blue Jasmine, 12 Years a Slave, American Hustle, and Gravity among the films vying for Best Picture. Tonight may honor the best in film. Last night, the worst films were unveiled during the Razzie Awards.
Father and son stink up the silver screen.
Do you know where we are?
No, sir.
Earth.
After Earth, starring Will and Jaden Smith, scoring three Razzie Awards, including Worst Actor and Worst Supporting Actor, also with a trio of trophies.
Caught you a leprechaun.
Who's magically delicious now?
The raunchy movie 43, earning Worst Picture, Screenplay, and Director. Tyler Perry, Worst Actress for A Medea Christmas, and Kim Kardashian, Worst Supporting Actress for Tyler Perry's Temptation. And Adam Sandler, surprisingly snubbed, despite eight nominations for Grown Ups 2. Steve Rappaport, Fox News Radio.
A New Zealand man, the first musher en route to the town of Nome, Alaska, for the Iditarod race. Lisa Lacerra, Fox News Radio.
A colorless landscape. The future is in peril. What we need now is a shining hope. Bringing the nation back. One voter at a time. This is Aaron McCready.
Back to the program, everyone. I am Aaron McCready. Give us a call at 646-200-3400. That's 646-200-3400. If you're just joining us, you missed a lively debate in the first half of the show on Georgia House Bill 907 here in Atlanta. That was very lively. You'll just go back and look at it on one of our on-demand episodes. But here with me now is Jack Caravelli, and this gentleman needs no introduction. He's been a great friend of the show. But just in case we have a new listener or two out there, Jack has extensive experience in both the intelligence and policymaking sides of the U.S. government. He joined the CIA as a Soviet Strategic Forces Analyst in 1982, and he spent the next 14 years with the agency in various analytic, staff, and managerial positions. In 1996, he was selected to serve on the White House National Security Council staff as Director for Nonproliferation. I can never say that. Maybe he can help me with that in a little bit. With responsibility to the president for formation of the policy on Russia and the Middle East. And then in 2000, he moved to the Department of Energy and served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Department's Threat Reduction Programs on Russia and other states of the former Soviet Union. Jack Caravelli, you are fresh off a plane from London. Welcome back, and maybe you can help me with that word.
It's nonproliferation, Aaron, and it's great to be with you, and it's good to be home, although the East Coast, once again, looks like it's getting ready for another snowstorm, at least in the Washington area. So I think I would have preferred to have stayed in London for a few extra days for many reasons.
Well, if you ever need a stowaway to go to London, you know, just I'll raise my hand to that. You can throw me one of your bags or something. But
that'd be great fun. We would do one of the famous pub crawls.
Well, there we go. That would work. But, hey, I wanted to have you on the show because we've got some serious issues over in Russia. And when I saw all the breaking news on, you know, CNN, Fox News, everywhere, I thought of you and thought you had to have you on and get your insights. But what is Vladimir Putin, thinking over there? It's right after the Olympics. They host the Olympics. Supposed to be about peace and happiness and world coming together. But now he wants to invade Ukraine. What's going on with that?
Well, Aaron, first of all, again, it's great to be with you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about these things. Your question, what's in Putin's mind? I mean, that's, I think, the question being asked all over Washington. And, again, as I was in London for the past week, being asked in London and other European capitals as well. The idea of sort of peace, love, and harmony from Sochi obviously is already a distant memory. Ukraine is really it's a simmer that has come to a boil. The flashpoint seems to be in the area of the Crimea, which is largely but not entirely a sort of Russian-leaning enclave, although it is, in a legal sense, Aaron, part of Ukraine. It was actually that area, if anyone is able to find a map of it, in newspapers or online, we'll sort of see that it's really detached for the most part from Ukraine. But when Nikita Khrushchev was running the Soviet Union in the late 50s, early 60s, he actually, and Khrushchev was Ukrainian, not Russian, he gave the Crimea back to Ukraine. When the Soviet Union broke up, in 1991, Ukraine, as you know, became an independent nation, and the Crimea became part of Ukraine. So in a very, very legal sense, Crimea, lock, stock, and barrel, is part of Ukraine, but in terms of the population, the majority of those living in Crimea actually are, at the very least, Russian-leaning. And it is really, I think, Putin's intent. He's very unhappy with the events over the past few weeks in Ukraine, where they tossed out a pro-Russian president, Yanukovych. So in his ire, what Putin is doing, I think, Aaron, is trying to play hardball, exercise, show a steel fist, and try to, frankly, intimidate the people in the region under the pretense of protecting, the citizens of Crimea from crimes that might be inflicted on them by the new Ukrainian government that very much is pro-Western leaning. And I think, we're really in a position where, it's a crisis already. It become even more so, again, if Putin miscalculates, or if the West, beginning with a very weak U.S. president, does not make very clear the consequences for Russia of its actions. And I am not implying that the United States should undertake military action, because I don't think that's going to happen at all. But there are a number of very forceful moves we could take send a signal to the Russians that we're serious about this, that Russian actions to try to take over parts of the Crimea won't work. But to this point, Aaron, we're not exercising them.
Well, what, if we did issue sanctions or what have you to Russia, I mean, to me, Putin comes across as such a hardhead and has such a issue with pride that, you know, that's why he's doing this with Crimea. But I mean, just out of spite to President Obama, I mean, I think that, I mean, maybe, I mean, you're the expert, but just from an outsider looking in, that Putin wouldn't care what the United States did, you know, on paper, just so he could save face.
Well, Aaron, you've raised an incredibly important issue, because ego and pride, as you say, really are important and central to that guy's makeup. Putin, in many ways, is a bully, or he tries to be a bully, and as I think you know, and without simplifying things, if you don't stand up to bullies, you know the results that you get. You know, we saw that happen in 2006 in Georgia when the Russians invaded militarily, of course, you know, against a very small and weak Georgian army, and the international community did very little. I would propose that if this administration is going to find a moral compass that means anything, it needs strong action. That would include, I'll give you a few examples, number one, politically backing Ukraine. Number two, financially backing Ukraine. The Ukrainian economy is a mess. I think the administration has talked about pledging $1 billion in assistance. But more than that, we can hit the Russians where it hurts them in a couple of ways. Number one, we could recognize Georgia. We were just talking about Georgia. Bring them into NATO, which would give Georgia automatically a lot of NATO military protection, and would just enrage the Russians because they think they own Georgia, whether they will say that or not. And then number two, Aaron, I think you could certainly work a deal where the administration goes back to the Romanians and Poland, countries that we were going to do a big missile defense program with in Europe, that the Russians really did not like because they thought it was directed against them. We caved and said, okay, we don't want the Russians to be upset, so we won't do the work with Poland and the Romanians, and we could go back and begin negotiations to resurrect that deal. And these are tangible things with at least some oomph that starts to show Putin, that, you know, he cannot act with impunity and just have a lot of talking points thrown at him by Obama or Kerry or the Brits.
One question I have for you, and this is going to seem outlandish, and it's almost just I don't even know why I'm going to ask you this, but I'm going to ask it anyways. But I saw it was on a CNN report or NBC, or I can't remember where I read this, maybe even Associated Press, but they interviewed a Russian and showed them a map. You know, of Russia and Ukraine and Crimea. And this guy said, well, it seems logical it would be Russian. Just look where it's located. And then I'm like, and this is where the outlandish part comes to mind, but this is how my mind works, I guess. But I'm like, oh, my goodness. Look how close we are, Alaska is to Russia. I mean, what's to stop this guy if you know, and I know, you know, like, you know, you mentioned Georgia and then we're talking about this with Ukraine, but I mean, if he keeps having his way, I mean, look how close we are up, you know, north with Alaska and Russia. I mean, what's to say they may decide to come on over there?
Well, I'm not too worried about the Russians there. I think Obama has the commitment to preserve the territorial integrity of the United States, and I think Mr. Putin might find a rather unfriendly and inhospitable welcome from the Alaskans, who I think are pretty tough breeding, probably could take care of themselves much better than those of us in Washington even could. But the Crimea, you know, Aaron, where the, you know, the focus of this current trouble is, you know, really does stem from a lot of history, and, you know, it's not resolved yet. I think that, you know, as you and I have talked before, one of the, you know, the lessons of history is that, you know, wars break out far too frequently when there are miscalculations or misunderstandings between the opposing sides. And the only thing that our government has said right now is, number one, don't do it, But if you do it, there will be quote-unquote consequences. And now John Kerry is saying all options are on the table, which may be the most feckless phrase used in present-day diplomacy. You know, it implies that, you know, military options could be considered, but anyone that's watched this president for the past 5 years understands, you know, that this guy just isn't prepared to use force in almost any circumstance when he has the option of doing something different.
One thing also that crossed my mind when all this started happening and Putin started, you know, bringing the military in and Ukraine, you know, got a little antsy, as they should. But, you know, a few days ago, or maybe a week ago, the Secretary of Defense announced that he wanted to reduce the military and close some bases. They've already announced that they're going to decommission a couple types of military aircraft. And it's going to take us to levels not hit, as far as low levels go in the military, since pre-World War II. Does this at all, in Putin's mind, play into to all of this?
Well, it's a great question, Aaron. And, you know, at some point, you know, numbers matter. You know, I think part of your question. We will, you're absolutely right, we will almost certainly reduce the size or the number of men and women in uniform, certainly to levels lower than, you know, where we were through the last, you know, 12 or years or so. You know, we went onto a war footing after, you know, September 2001. And, you know, to some extent, given the, you know, the terrible debt that we have, other spending priorities at home and the like, you know, and that we are ending the war in Afghanistan and we have ended the war in Iraq, it's probably appropriate that there be some reductions in the numbers of uniformed military. Now, having said that, you know, I think that, you know, the numbers Hagel is talking about, and Obama and the Congress may or may not, on the congressional side, sign off on, you know, may well be too low. And these kind of crises, not only in terms of people in uniform and the numbers, but also, you know, the numbers of ships and aircraft. I mean, these things, you know, do count, again, to some extent. You know, the quality of our military remains extraordinarily high, and I would pit us against any adversary. But, you know, your point is very well taken that if you're someone like Putin who's crass, somebody whispers in his ear and says, look, the Americans are weak. They did not carry out the threats to attack Syria. They're, you know, they've come out of Iraq. They're coming out of Afghanistan. You know, it's a retrenchment kind of policy from a weak Democratic president. This is what I was saying before, that, you know, miscalculations, misperceptions, you know, about our capabilities, not to be confused with our resolve politically, you know, all those things go into the mix, and bad things can happen when people make miscalculations.
Well, what's it going to take for Obama to get some credibility back on, you know, in the world stage? Because, you know, I mean, how he's acted, performed, and what he's said and what he's done. I mean, I mention this all the time, but, I mean, we couldn't even protect our embassy in Libya. And, and it, you know, the world saw that and what happened. And, you know, how can Russia take us seriously, and what does he need to do to be respected by them, where they will listen to our president?
Well, Aaron, I think the answer to your first question is simply that this is an opportunity for him to really reassert America's credibility, and there's no other way to express it. Some of those ways are what we discussed a few minutes ago about supporting Ukraine, about putting some sticks in Russia's eyes regarding the missile defense issue regarding maybe Georgia entering NATO. Obama should be marshaling the support of the, you know, the big players in Europe, the Brits, the French, the Germans, certainly the rest of NATO, and really do a full court press on the Russians. We have, you know, I think my message to you in the audience is we have cards to play that can certainly put a very strong shot across Putin's bow. And, you know, if he has any illusions that he can just sort of stroll into the Crimea, take what he wants, and there'll be no repercussions, well, you know, we've got cards to play to show that, that's not a cost-free gambit. But, you know, as we're saying to each other, I think, Aaron, the point is Obama has to be willing to do that. And if you look at his track record, again, if we're back in Moscow with Putin, you look at Obama's track record and you think, you know, this guy's a weakling. We can take this on. We can succeed like we did in Georgia in 2006, and the Americans will be none the wiser.
Well, you know, I'm just really concerned about this because I do care about our standing in the world. And, you know, I hope that, you know, if like you said, miscalculations, if Putin does miscalculate us, that it's like World War II, the Japanese, they said, you know, once they attacked Pearl Harbor, that they awakened a sleeping giant. And you know, I hope that Putin will realize that, you know, even though we do have a weak president, the United States really isn't that weak. And I just think that his pride is just taking a hold of him.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm afraid you're close to being right, my friend. There's a lot here that could happen in the next week or two that could be very dangerous, just for the reasons we've been saying to each other. And I think the best way to minimize that chance is for Obama to make abundantly clear, as presidents have done in past crises, that, you know, if you do these things, there will be consequences, and here are what some of them are. If you want to take that risk, Mr. Putin, go for it, but we are telling you we're not bluffing. America doesn't bluff, and there will be a series of things that will be very unfavorable to your interests. But if the Crimea is that important to you, you know, let's go for it and see what happens.
What are President Obama's advisors telling him right now? You've been, inside the White House walls and probably part of those talks. What is he being told right now? And whether he responds to it or not, what would you be telling the president?
Well, I think it centers actually on, Aaron, the question you asked at the start of our conversation. You know, what does Putin want, and how is he going to try to get it? You know, I think those questions, you know, much of this whole discussion centers on providing answers and insights to those questions. And, you know, the advisors would, of course, be sending their own views and, you know, sharing those with the president as appropriate. You know, in addition, of course, you have the U.S. intelligence community, experts at the State Department, the Pentagon. So the president has a lot of resources to draw upon, and his advisors do. You know, they can literally pick up the phone and get the CIA director to, you know, get his experts to write papers, as I'm sure they are, and the like. So, you know, it's a marshaling of the intellectual firepower in Washington, and there's some very good people in the bureaucracy who, could shed a lot of insight on these questions. But again, at the end of the day, it's what the advisors want to put in the president's ear, and of course, what parts of the message he chooses to take.
And I don't know how well connected you are to the current administration or you know what's going on in there. But,
well, I don't think they like me too much.
well, maybe not, but. You know, I'm afraid that he won't listen to his advisors because, you know, it's like pulling teeth to get him to meet with his advisors in person. He'd rather take the briefings in paper. And to me, if I were president, I would want to have those meetings face-to-face each day because I don't think that you can really substitute something on paper for something when you're talking to somebody and seeing their reactions and their inflections and listen to their tone. As far as a sense of urgency, I am just terrified that this president is going to make a wrong decision, but his advisors are giving him the correct answers.
Well, you know, Aaron, that's certainly a scenario that could play out. That is his managerial style, and I think you've really hit the nail on the head on a key issue. I mean, style matters. I'm with you. I mean, if I had the terrible burden of sitting in the Oval Office, I would very much want to be talking to the advisors for the reasons you said, face-to-face. You know, obviously you have a dialogue. You know, you see their level of, you know, commitment on an issue, their uncertainties, and all those things to, I think, an astute leader really should go into the mix for his decisions. And there is no substitute for that, as you said, and I am with you 100%, but I don't know that he'll be doing much of that, but we'll see what happens in next week or two.
Well, Jack, I really appreciate your insights and coming on the show, and especially after you just flew back from London and getting off and coming on here. I don't think that speaks volumes about the show. That definitely speaks volumes about you. So I really appreciate you know, your commitment to the Middle East and Russia and how great of a friend you've been to the show. And again, you're welcome back anytime.
Well, Aaron, many thanks for those kind words. It is, I think, a reflection on the show, because I think you do a tremendous job and a great public service. You take on a whole lot of issues, and, you know, the willingness to spend some time and digging into this a little bit. And, you know, these are issues that we need to keep our public informed on. They seem distant at times and not as much fun as watching the Academy Awards, but these things matter. And, you know, your leadership and on the media side is important, and I respect it immensely, and you always have my time.
Well, I appreciate it, and you've got to be exhausted, so go get some sleep and do it again tomorrow.
Thanks much, Aaron. Stay well.
Hey, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jack Caravelli. You know, as you heard, he's just a wealth of knowledge about Russia, the Middle East, that whole part of the world, and we you know, we need to keep our eye on the ball on this one and hope our president makes the right decision. And even though I am an outspoken supporter of President Barack Obama, or, you know, do not support him at all, but, you know, I think we need to support him in making the correct decision when it comes to Russia, because Russia is no joke. They do mean business. And, you know, we're dealing with a leader in Vladimir Putin over in Russia that, you know, at the time when Barack Obama was out smoking weed and growing up, Vladimir Putin was in, you know, in the intelligence side of the Soviet government at that time. So we really need to keep this in mind. And you know, we just need to keep, you know, make sure that Obama takes the advice of his advisors and you know, goes to those meetings, and really takes this seriously, as I'm sure he probably is. But he really needs to make the right decision. But I'd like to thank all my guests today, Representative Jimmy Pruitt, Greg Williams, of course, Mr. Jack Caravelli. He's always great to be on the show. You know, one thing on a side note for everybody listening in Georgia, we really need to make sure that House Bill 907 does not pass. You know, I hope Representative Pruitt is telling me the truth when he says that if those are the only two things in the bill, he'll support it. If there's any other things, he won't. And I promise you, if that ends up not being the case, we will hold Representative Pruitt accountable and to task. And if I have to go down there and campaign for him when he doesn't support it, or if I have to campaign against him, then I am willing to do that. But he was great to be on the show. He was one of only six or seven people that are sponsoring the bill that would come on the show, which I really do appreciate. And, this did put Republicans against Republicans, but that doesn't show weakness. That just shows that the Republicans have a mind of our own, and we will debate the issues with each other, as opposed to the Democrats that, you know, you have one leader say something, everybody follows, and they'll walk right off a cliff, just, you know, like a Pied Piper or something. But at least the Republicans are willing to step out there. And, you know, when we disagree, we'll say it. And when we agree, we'll say it. But at least we're just not following blindly like I believe some liberals and conservatives do. But thanks for tuning into the show tonight. I'd like to thank Adam for manning the phones and getting all of our guests on and up and running. I really appreciate that. Tune in next time to us, and be safe. And remember, let's make sure House Bill 907 does not pass and it gets killed in the legislature. Thank you so much, and have a great night.